Welcome to a new episode of Linguistic Voices on Campus. In this podcast series, scholars reflect on linguistic topics of common interest through the lens of their own research here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. My name is Anja Wanner, and I'm a professor of English here. My guest today is Professor Rita Kaushanskaya, a professor in the Department of Communicative Disorders. Her research focuses on cognitive aspects of second language acquisition and bilingualism in children and adults. Welcome, Professor Kaushanskaya.
Thank you.
You are working, among other things, on how children learn words. And since you study bilingualism, I wonder if the process of word learning for bilingual children is essentially different from monolingual children, or is it just the case that they have to learn more words because they have to learn the vocabulary of two languages?
This is an interesting question in the field of bilingualism. The fundamental assumption has always been that the process of vocabulary acquisition is essentially the same for bilingual and monolingual children, that the cognitive apparatus, in effect, is the same, and therefore the acquisitional process is the same as well. The difference has always thought to be localized in the sheer quantity of the words that had to be learned. So we have always assumed that learning two languages is more difficult than learning one language, and therefore bilingual children acquiring vocabulary in two of their languages should be lagging in terms of acquiring each of the lexica compared to monolingual children. And that assumption has been borne out. So comparison studies done looking at bilingual kids who are exposed to both languages at birth and comparing their vocabulary in each of the two languages to their monolingual age-matched peers has consistently shown that if you measure each of the vocabulary storages for the bilingual kids, you will see smaller vocabulary sizes compared to monolingual children and slower acquisition just because of the sheer volume of the words that they have to learn. The interesting thing that has been found in that research is that these differences in terms of the quantity of the vocabulary items tend to dissipate with age. So by the time children hit middle school, these quantitative differences actually do tend to disappear. And if you just measure the number of words that bilingual children know in each of their languages, you will see seeing the differences between bilinguals and monolinguals. However, the differences in the speed of access do persist. So even bilingual adults who are seemingly equally fluent in each of their languages and on the surface do not differ from their monolingual peers tend to be slower in accessing words in each of their two languages compared to monolinguals.
When you say slower, you measure things in milliseconds.
Yes, I suppose.
So is that slower? Would that be something that ordinary people would notice in regular conversations?
No, and that's precisely the point. So these differences that we're talking about are really on the order of milliseconds. So 30 to 50 milliseconds, which is a very small amount of time in terms of just superficial observation, but we do know that these very tiny differences actually do have psychological reality to them. So, for example, we know from the work that Anne Fernald has been doing at Stanford that the speed with which children can process words actually has a large impact on their subsequent vocabulary acquisition. So if you measure the speed with which a 9-month-old infant can process a name and land on the picture appropriate to that name, kids who are slower, and by slower I do mean a very small difference in terms of real time, do tend to lag in vocabulary acquisition compared to children who are quicker. And so these tiny differences actually do have a real impact on how people process language and how they function in everyday life.
Very interesting to even measure that. You mentioned the term bilingual. I use the term bilingual, but perhaps we're using it in different ways because many people use the term in different ways. For some, to say that someone is bilingual means that that person is functioning in two languages. So some people would consider me bilingual, but I don't. For me, bilingual means that a person grew up essentially with two first languages. From your perspective, is this just a quibble or is this just a theoretical difference? Or does it really make a difference in terms of how the brain works.
It certainly does. So the question that you raise about how do we define bilingual is a fundamental one, because any study that claims anything about bilingualism in general also has to make very clear about the population that's been studied. And what we find to be true for highly proficient balanced bilinguals often does not hold for people who are in the intermediate stages of second language acquisition.
When you're saying balanced bilinguals, what does that mean?
Balanced means that the person is equally functional in both of the languages. So that means that the person is equally fluent in conversational speech, equally fluent in reading, equally fluent in comprehension.
And what type of bilingual do you study?
I study actually various stages of bilingualism. So in my adult work, I've studied people who are simultaneous bilinguals, people who were exposed to both languages from birth and have carried that proficiency in their two languages to their adulthood. So they are, in essence, the quote-unquote perfect bilinguals. But I have also studied people who are in the process of classroom-based second language acquisition to see whether that exposure, limited as it may be, also has an effect on the way people process language.
And does it?
It does.
Well, that's very good for everyone who's learning a second language. We talked a bit about vocabulary acquisition. Let's also talk a bit about syntax and grammar. A bilingual speaker must have a mental representation of two grammars, and I wonder if there's just one super system that they have with kind of two dialects, and the two dialects would be the two languages, or do they have two completely separate grammars, and can there be some sort of interference from grammar one to grammar two?
This is a great question. It's great because we actually don't have an answer to it as a field. The reason why we don't have an answer to it is because it's very difficult to tell apart, and this also pertains to the lexicon, the situation where the words from both languages or the grammatical structures from both languages are a unified system in one's mind, or if the bilingual speaker just accesses both systems at the same time. We know the second to be true. So we know that bilinguals do not go around switching their languages on and off, depending on circumstances. So no matter how embedded one is in a target language situation, the non-target language is always present in the back of one's mind. And we certainly know that interference occurs, and we also know that simultaneous access occurs. But that, of course, does not translate into the assumption that the representations are, in fact, intertwined.
I understand. And that's just very hard to even test the difference.
Of course.
You mentioned that you also study adult bilinguals, and obviously it's a very good thing to be able to read and speak in a second language. But in your research, you also discovered another benefit, I believe, that knowledge of a second language seems to improve literacy in general. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about that?
Certainly. About 15 to 20 years ago, people have started noticing that bilinguals actually perform better on certain cognitive tasks compared to monolinguals. This type of research came on, sort of followed the fairly long-held assumption that bilingualism is actually bad for you. So for the longest time, people have thought that having two languages in one's mind is confusing to the speaker. It delays language development. There have been claims that bilingual children score lower on IQ tests compared to monolingual children. And those assumptions started to be challenged around 20 years ago when people have noticed that on certain tasks, bilinguals outperform monolinguals.
What kind of tasks would that be?
And the tasks fall broadly into two categories. Some tasks are linguistic in nature, so they measure the way bilinguals process language, access language. And some tasks are actually non-linguistic in nature. These are the broad cognitive tasks that seem to be domain general, meaning that they underlie the linguistic capacity, but they also feed into other abilities. So these are central cognitive skills. On the linguistic side, we found that bilinguals, so let me talk about the adults first. We found that English-Spanish bilingual adults, so these are people who have been exposed to English from birth and have also been exposed to Spanish early in life. And they've gained fairly high proficiency in Spanish through family interactions, through exposure to family members in an immersion-type setting. What we found is that these bilinguals, actually, if you measure their proficiency in reading Spanish, that translates into their proficiency in reading English. So people who read Spanish well are also the people that read English well, which to us says that exposure to another alphabetic language, especially as transparent a language as Spanish is, seems to facilitate one's ability to learn to read in English, a very opaque system.
Does it also work the other way around, that if you are a good reader in your first language, you somehow have an advantage?
That's absolutely the case. We have known that for a while, that literacy skills tend to transfer across languages. So children who are successful with acquiring literacy in their native language will transfer a lot of that skill into the acquisition of the second language. What is interesting about the literacy research is that the benefits of bilingualism tend to be fairly specific to particular linguistic groups. So these advantages carry over for bilinguals who speak two alphabetic languages, mm-hmm. languages where the principles of decoding are the same. They do not tend to carry over to bilinguals who speak highly distinct languages like English and Mandarin Chinese. So for us, what we have found is that an English-Mandarin bilingual group actually showed a very different pattern from the English-Spanish bilingual group. So when we measure the bilinguals' proficiency in reading Mandarin, the higher they were on that measure, the less well they read English.
Because they couldn't transfer that.
That's exactly right. And in the pediatric domain, Ellen Bialystok has done some stellar research showing that if you just measure the sheer pre-literacy phonological awareness skills, so these are the skills that allow children to dissect a word into its individual phonemes. And we know that this skill underlies literacy acquisition in alphabetic languages, mm-hmm. because essentially to be able to read in English, you must be able to map the letter onto the sound that it goes with, and you must be able to do this quickly and consistently. And to
even
be able,
though that mapping in English is more tricky than
absolutely,
in other languages.
Absolutely, that's precisely it, which is why phonological awareness is that much more important for acquiring English orthography. And so what Ellen has found is that in terms of acquiring these phonological awareness skills, bilingual children outperform monolingual children, but only in the case of bilinguals acquiring two alphabetic systems. So you see these advantages on these phonological awareness tasks in English-Spanish bilinguals, in English-Hebrew bilinguals, but you do not see them in English-Mandarin bilinguals. Mm-hmm.
Now, my next question is a question that you probably get asked all the time as someone who does research on bilingualism, and I have a particular personal interest in this as well. As a parent of a child who I hope will be bilingual, we speak German in the home and she encounters English everywhere else. I wonder if you have any tips for parents who want to raise their children bilingually. And I now realize that English-German, they're both alphabetic systems, so it may be one of those situations where you can actually have some benefit, at least when it comes to reading skills.
Absolutely. But more generally, I think we're finding more and more that any sort of bilingual exposure coupled to a typical cognitive development leads to advantages in processing, which we can talk about after I answer this fundamental question. And my answer has always been that exposure equals success in acquisition. So if you want your child to be a bilingual speaker, you need to ensure equal and robust exposure to each of the child's two languages.
Does it matter if it's exposure to German in general or the second, first language in general, or should it be exposure and interaction with peers? Because I feel that she mainly interacts with her parents, and it might be better if she also had peers to interact with who speak German only. Difficult to do in Madison, Wisconsin, but...
Right. And also, I would guess, probably not crucial. Any exposure that's additional to what you provide at home is, of course, beneficial. But in terms of raising a child bilingually, as long as you ensure adequate exposure and vary the contexts in which your child is exposed to that language, I think you can be fairly certain that you will build that proficiency. What you cannot control, of course, is the sociocultural aspects of all of this. We do know that, especially in immigrant families, the home language is often the language that children lose because it is by definition a minority language. And so English takes precedence because that's the language that they use in school. That's the language that they use to interact with their peers. And of course, in the context of the United States, the family will often be able to use English as well. And so that pressure to maintain the native language, the home language, is not experienced by the child. So
are you saying we should build up some pressure?
As long as it's benign, yes. And those are the things that you cannot control. I mean, it's just something that you can try to instill the value of the home language into the child, but sometimes it's very difficult to control that. And we see this a lot in immigrant communities where children will, in essence, become heritage speakers, where there will be the latent knowledge of the home language, but they will not be producing anything in that language. And so these are the children that you will often see in foreign language classrooms at the universities, where once they go over that teenage hump of rebellion, the need to embed themselves in the home language becomes much more, much, much stronger.
Thank you. And that concludes our podcast for today. I hope you enjoyed our conversation on bilingualism and will join us for our next episode. You can subscribe to Linguistic Voices on Campus on iTunes.